Good evening. If you don't know me, I'm Catherine, but I think everyone here does know me, so I won't bother with any further introduction. I just wanted to start by just reading an extract from John. And it says this, John 1, verse 10. He came into the very world he created, but the world didn't recognize him. He came to his own people, and even they rejected him. But to all who believed in him and accepted him, he gave the right to become children of God. They are reborn not with physical birth resulting from human passion or plan, but a birth that comes from God. So the Word became human and made his home among us. He was full of unfailing love and faithfulness, and we have seen his glory, the glory of the Father's one and only Son. If you've been here the last few weeks, you'll know that we've been looking at the Trinity, and it's been in connection with this book, The Great Dance by C. Baxter Kruger, and other people have recommended that you read it, so I won't say that again. But last week, Katie looked at identity, and this week I've got Trinity Earthed Incarnation. Start off with thought, Trinity Earthed. It sounded a bit like I was supposed to be doing some sort of physics experiment, something, but no, it's the incarnation. And it got me thinking about that word incarnation, actually, because I don't think it's a word that we use very often. It seems, in some ways, there's something sort of old in its perhaps its terminology. There's something very intellectual about it, perhaps quite traditional about it. And I guess in an attempt to sort of appeal to the modern world, we don't tend to use words like the incarnation very often. What we tend to do is talk more about, oh, the Christmas story or the Easter story. And perhaps, you know, we don't use those more sort of theological terms, perhaps. And yet, I guess actually, the more I thought about it, I thought there's a risk in that, because it means that actually we perhaps lose sight of the real meaning of the events, that we, by always talking about just the Christmas story or the Easter story, we actually miss the very special thing that is encapsulated in the word incarnation. I don't know about you, but I get the feeling there were quite a few excited people in Cambridge this week. Cambridge United were playing Manchester United. And there was a real sense of excitement in that meet. And I sort of thought, well, you know, why? And I guess in that sense, it's in that match, there was this sort of unusual sense of the ordinary coming together with the extraordinary, wasn't there? You know, the great Manchester United. And Martin and I watched all Cambridge United's little, what do you call them? The little kids that go out with the team. Mascots. Yeah, they'd clearly got every person who'd ever been a mascot or ever wanted to be a mascot going out, because there was something very special about the team they were playing. You know, Cambridge were very much the ordinary ones, and Manchester United, the great sort of extraordinary. And although it's a bit of a tenuous link, I grant you, in some ways that sort of bristle of excitement, that anticipation, that wonder that I imagine some of those children felt walking out as the ordinary ones, meeting the extraordinary, gives us a flavour of how we should be feeling about the incarnation. Because in many ways it is a day when the ordinary us meet the extraordinary. Somebody said, history is littered with examples of men who would become gods, but only one example of God becoming man. And I guess, you know, it's this very event that we think about in the incarnation of Jesus being born on earth as man that has defined who we are and will continue to define who we are. And so I just wanted to pick out three things tonight that Kruger talks about in his book about the incarnation that just perhaps help us to sort of think about it anew and dwell on it perhaps in a slightly different way. So the first thing is that the incarnation is about God wanting to meet with us and form a relationship with us. There was a story of a Persian prince, and one day he was going through a very poor part of his realm, and he saw this beautiful lady, and he said to his people around him, that is the lady that I want for my wife, but how should I woo her? And he said, I could just command her to marry me. After all, I am the prince. But somehow he didn't really want that, because he didn't want to just command her. That for him wouldn't have been a real relationship. So then he said, well, I could just have wooed her, I suppose, with riches. I could sort of shower her with things, and I could sort of come on my finest robes and treat her to nice things, and then maybe that would work. But then he said that's not going to work either in a way that's satisfactory, because then she probably would just love me for what I have, what I can give, rather than the nature of who I am. And so what he realised in the end was that what he had to do was to give up all his riches and actually go and live in the community for a while and get to know her, so that she fell in love with the person that he was, rather than the riches he had or the status that he had. And the incarnation is very similar. Kruger says it's about God wanting to meet with us, coming and living among us, in order that we will better understand who he really is and then be able to enter into a relationship with him. Kruger says in his book that the Western Church tends to focus very much on forgiveness when it talks about the incarnation. And it's interesting that a lot of the songs we've sung tonight are all about the cross. And he says we tend to dwell so much on forgiveness, which he says is right, but he says we sometimes miss the fact that the primary aim of the incarnation was to come to have relationship with us. It reminded me a bit of Harry Potter. I'm really in a tenuous link tonight, Cambridge United and Harry Potter, but, you know. If you're a Harry Potter fan, you know that Voldemort, the baddie, and Harry are inextricably linked. They, at the end of the day, they know that their existence in some way is connected, and they know there's going to have to be a sort of final meet. There's going to have to be a point where they meet for their sort of existence to be fulfilled. And I guess in some ways, although I don't want to make a direct parallel between Voldemort and the Trinity, a little bit dodgy, but there's something about the sense that if we didn't have the incarnation, the Father would just be this sort of separate entity. And that the only way in which God's plan would ever come to fruition is in this sort of ineffable connection with us. There has to be a point of connection. The Trinity enables that sort of supernatural entity to enter our world and make himself known. And in Becoming Earthly, there's perhaps an issue. Kruger writes that some people have a real issue with how can this supernatural, perfect God, who's pure, come together with an existence that is broken, corrupt, lacking in peace, the complete opposite to all the very things that define him. But he talks a lot in his book about actually, you know, the reason that he bore that contradiction is because he wanted to come in and wrestle with the brokenness of humanity. That he had a desire to come and wrestle with that brokenness of humanity as a way of restoring us to him. And none of that could happen if we didn't have this moment when God became man. Without any of that, there would be no restoration. There would be no point of meeting with our world. And it's because he came and he suffered that we know that he knows how we feel when times are bad. So I think the first thing that I want us to take away from the incarnation is that it's about God wanting to meet with us. It's about God revealing his desire for a relationship with us. The second thing I thought that was interesting and that Kruger was bringing out was that incarnation allows God to reveal something of his nature to us. When Jesus was here on earth, he wasn't separated from the Father. It wasn't like, I am now Jesus, therefore the Father doesn't exist. The Trinity is a complex thing. Kruger gives the analogy of people being trapped down a mine. And he says, you know, imagine that there's a party of people trapped in a mine. He said it would be no good having a rescue team who just stay at the top because the people would remain lost. And then he says it's no good having a rescue team that might go down into the mine but don't stay in contact with the surface team, because, again, it's very unlikely that they wouldn't find the way and they would get lost. And he says that in the Trinity we have to understand that even though Jesus is on earth, he is still at one with the surface team, if you like. He is still connected to the Father. And if he wasn't, there would have been no point in him coming, because when he came, there would be nothing to give, nothing to bring. Kruger goes on to say, which I thought was really quite interesting, that he thinks in some ways the church has got this sort of sense that that God is very distant, and that the incarnation is sort of reducing Jesus to a sort of distant figure, because when he left earth, it was like job done. That's it, job done, all finished, game over, end point. And he says actually what the incarnation is supposed to be showing us is that the very nature of God is that it's a start of something. It's a constant relationship. It's a meeting point in Jesus between us and the Father, a connection, a union that starts then and doesn't end when Jesus goes back to heaven. It continues. He says, you know, Jesus is not returning to heaven when he leaves earth like a spectator. The incarnation is a way of him saying it's the starting point in a walk with us. Kruger writes, I quite like this idea of a heavenly toolbox. He says, Jesus Christ is not a divine wrench that God picked up and used for a while. Neither is Jesus a mere accountant who came to balance the ledger. He is a living atonement now and forever. So there's something in this sense of, if we're thinking about the incarnation, it shows us who God the Father really is. Somebody who wishes to remain connected with us. Kruger talks a lot about his experience of church as a young man. I'm going to read this. I hope it doesn't define St. Matt's. But I'll let you be the judge of that. Okay, it says, he talks about people that he saw in church who he terms as the highly committed religious types. He says, naturally, I assumed that these types walked more closely with God than the rest of us. They certainly appeared to do so. As far as I could tell, they were good people and honourable, but they were about as interesting as a fence post. The highly committed religious types always struck me as being a shade or two on the nerdy side and heavy into religion because they could not do anything else, and the force of the threshold was obviously with them. Their presence alone could change people. Their presence could shut down laughter and stifle the best of parties. Whatever the highly committed religious types were, it was very clear to me that they did not have much of the river about them. They certainly knew a lot about the Bible, and they talked frequently about God, but they did not know much about the great dance and how to live it. The God of my youth was the supreme, all-powerful being with no face and no personality. With weekly regularity, the threshold confirmed the basic vision of God as we all left our personalities at the door and entered in to worship him. And that may be, I don't think that does describe St. Matt's, but that may be the experience of church that you had previously to now. If the church has become about rules and a view of a distant God, then we're missing something, Kruger says. He says that in the incarnation, God was trying to show us the simplicity of the Trinity's message. That actually God was showing his love to us, his plan for us. And that's not about how religious you are. It's not about how many rules you follow. It's about recognizing that in coming into our world, he wanted to show us that love, that relationship. Again, Kruger uses what I thought was just a really nice story about somewhere that he went to speak. And after he'd finished, a little girl came up to him. And he asked her if something was wrong. And she said, "Nothing is wrong, Mr. Kruger. When you were telling your story, God gave me a vision. I saw God sitting on a throne, and there were all of these steps leading up to his throne. And there were people, hundreds and hundreds of people on the steps. We were all trying to get to God, but none of us could make it. We kept falling, and we could not get to God, and we were all sad. And then I saw Jesus. He walked over, gathered us all up in his arms, and walked up the steps, putting us on the Father's lap." And so I think the second thing about the incarnation, as I said, is that he's trying to reveal something of the nature of himself in it. And the last thing I wanted to talk about the incarnation was that, as well as showing us a bit about himself, I think the incarnation is a sign for how we should be. You know, we could just go, whoopee, hooray, we're saved, hurrah. But that seems a bit empty, doesn't it? You wouldn't go on a journey to a holiday of some sort, and then when you get there, just stay in the hotel room. And that would be what it would feel like, I think, if we accept the wonder of the incarnation, the fact that it's a way of bringing us into meeting with God, into the concept of the Trinity, then I think we would be in a very similar position if we just said, well, that's the end of it. That's where it stops. The incarnation, I think, is a call for action. Saint Athanasius said, he became what we are so that we might become what he is. He became what we are so that we might become what he is. And I guess when we look at the life that Jesus led, there are lots of things there that we might say, which we often talk about, that should be something about how we live our life. Various miracles that he did, he showed love and compassion, care for outcasts, and walked really closely with his Father. And those are the sorts of things that often we would say we want to try and model if we're going to walk a Christian life. But I don't know about you, but sometimes, you know, we tend to think that being a Christian is about sort of an intelligence or an intellectual sort of capacity to understand theology and concepts. And that's especially true, I think, of something like the Trinity. And yet actually, really, there's a simplicity to it. We're called to accept that God wanted to meet with us, accept that he wanted to show his love to us, that he came to serve us. And then in that, there's just a simple call that we perhaps should go and serve others. We can think, can't we, that, as I said, it's something really highbrow and very difficult. But actually, when you think about Jesus' time on earth, yes, he spent time doing things that we might say were religious, but he spent an awful lot of time in the ordinary. He was a carpenter. He spent years as an apprentice, years making tables. And actually, if we're going to fully understand the wonder of the incarnation, then it isn't wrong, Kruger suggests, to spend time thinking about how we can reflect on Jesus in our ordinary lives. And just to close and really sort of focus on that point, just want to read you something that Kruger says about an experience that he had. Several years ago, I stood on the mound pitching baseball to a dozen little boys. Most of the boys did not know much about baseball, but they were caught up in it. I could see the eagerness in their eyes, the determination. I saw their camaraderie and fellowship, and I loved being in the middle of it. But inside of me, there was a little wrestling match going on. One part of me was thrilled. The other part of me felt guilty. At the time, I was a pastor, and I felt guilty that I was having so much fun doing something so secular. I should be praying for people, visiting the sick, or working on my sermon, at least talking to these kids trying to get them saved. Right in the middle of my wrestling match, the Lord spoke to me. Baxter, don't you dare miss this. Don't you dare miss what's happening here on this field with these 12 boys. Baxter, there is more of my glory here, more of my life and the fellowship I share with my Father, more of the spirit of sonship and the free-flowing dance of the Trinity on this field than you have ever seen in those sterile church services. Baxter, do not be blind. The great dance is present, not absent. Jesus Christ is indeed living out his sonship, his great dance of life and fellowship with his Father, his baptism in the Spirit. But he does not live it out alone. He lives it out through us and through our ordinary human lives. And that is why we should love life. That is why we love baseball and gardening, fishing and cookouts, having coffee together. That is why we love lake designing and building projects. That is why we love laughter and fellowship and romance and sex. That is why we love adventure and racing cars and taking care of animals. The Father, Son, and Spirit do not live out their great dance of life without us. The great dance of the triune God is the river running through it all, and it is good. Let's pray.